And of course, Mr. Weinstein, I'm sure, has never studied the Continental Congress. Continental Congress was the first Congress of America. The Continental Congress formed the Continental Army in 1775, and they had to create what's called the Articles of War, which is a document designed to govern the conduct of the Continental Army. And it was comprised of 69 separate articles. And the first 12 articles of this Articles of War document had to do with the proper behavior of American soldiers and the kind of punishments that would be meted out to those who violate that behavior. So if Mr. Weinstein did a little honest research into the history of the nation, he would realize, to his utter horror, I'm sure, that it was important to the Founding Fathers that American soldiers conducted themselves in a godly manner. Imagine that. I'm going to read a couple of these articles from this Articles of War. Article 2 says, "It is earnestly recommended to all officers and soldiers diligently to attend divine service," that's church service, "and all officers and soldiers who shall behave indecently or irreverently at any place of divine worship shall, if commissioned officers, be brought before the court-martial. They're to be publicly and severely reprimanded by the president. If non-commissioned officers or soldiers, every person so offending shall, for his first offense, forfeit $0.01 to be deducted out of his next pay. For the second offense, he shall not only forfeit like sum, but be confined for 24 hours, and for every like offense shall suffer and pay in like manner, which money so forfeited shall be applied to the use of the sick soldiers of the troop or company which the offender belongs." So they were earnestly recommending that American soldiers attend divine service, and they're telling the officers to make sure they behave morally. Article 3 said, "Whatsoever non-commissioned officer or soldier shall use any profane oath or excretion shall incur the penalties expressed in the second article, and if commissioned officer be thus guilty of profane cursing or swearing, he shall forfeit and pay for each of the every such offense the sum of 4 shillings, lawful money." So if you're caught even swearing or using profane language, you can be fined. Article 4 says, "Any officer or soldier who shall behave himself with contempt or disrespect towards the general, commanding officers, and so forth, or shall speak false words tending to his or her hurt or dishonor shall be punished according to the nature of his office offense by the judgment of the general court-martial." So it just shows you the kind of morality that was being imposed upon American soldiers by a Congress. That Congress was also really concerned about the Navy, because the Navy guys are together in close quarter. They're out at sea for months and months at a time. All kinds of things can happen. So they had a separate list of articles for the Navy. And Articles 1 says, "The commanders of all ships and vessels belonging to the 13 United Colonies are strictly required to show in themselves a good example of honor and virtue to their officers and men, and to be very diligent in inspecting the behavior of all such as are under them, and to discountenance and suppress all dissolute, immoral, and disorderly practices, and also such as are contrary to the rules of discipline and obedience, and to correct those who are guilty of the same according to the usage of the sea." Article 2 says, "The commanders of the ships in the 13 colonies are to take care that divine service be performed twice a day on board," that's church services, "twice a day on board, and a sermon preached on Sundays, unless bad weather or other extraordinary accidents prevent it." Article 3 says, "If any shall be heard to swear, curse, or blaspheme the name of God, the captain is strictly enjoined to punish them for every offense by causing them to wear a wooden collar or some other shameful badge of distinction for so long as time he shall judge proper. If he be a commissioned officer, he shall forfeit 1 shilling for each offense, and a warrant or inferior officer 6 pence. He who is guilty of drunkenness, if a seaman, shall be put into irons until he is sober. But if an officer, he shall be forfeited 2 days' pay." So you couldn't get drunk, you couldn't swear, you couldn't blaspheme. These are orders from a Congress. So if Mr. Weinstein were alive in 1775, I'm sure he'd be having a fit, and they'd be threatening to sue the entire Congress for breaching the wall of separation of church and state. Isn't it terrible? The United States Congress ordered the Navy to hold not one, but 2 church services every day on their ships. Well, where's the religious liberty there? Well, there is religious liberty, because even though they had to have 2 services a day, the men were not required to attend those services. But they were required to behave in a Christian manner. And there's the little microcosm of the balance between upholding the Christian principles which this nation is created on and letting the individual free. There had to be church services, but you didn't have to go. However, you did have to behave in a Christian manner. Whether you believe in Christianity or not, whether you're a Christian or not, you still had to act in a Christian manner. So morality was legislated. by the Congress. Americans didn't have to go to the church. They're free to ignore, but they weren't free to ignore the reality of the Christian foundation of the nation, you see. The reality of that foundation was right there in front of them. They had to participate in it, but they couldn't get away from it. And this is what people like Mr. Weinstein hate. They not only want to be free to reject Christianity, they want to be free of all the reminders that there is a God. And that's the whole problem. If somebody doesn't want to believe in God, that's their problem. They're going to go to hell. It's no skin off my back. Let them go to hell. But when they want to get free of all the reminders of God, that's different, because then you got to mess with the entire country, with the political life, the social life, eventually get involved in my personal life. That's a big difference. And that's where these people cross the line. They're not just saying, I want a right to not believe in God. I want to have the right to not have to go to church. I want a right to not have to listen to sermons. Okay, that's fine. But when you say, I want a right to not even be reminded of God and have everything that reminds me of God taken out of the country, that's crossing the line, you see? And that's what these people do. They hate God. They hate Christianity because it's a reminder of their own iniquity. See, it ruins their day. When they have to be reminded of Christianity and a holy God and righteousness, they're reminded of their sin. And that ruins your day because they can't enjoy their sin quite as much. See, these people don't want freedom of religion. They want to be free from any and all influences and reminders of God and Christianity. But for most of them, the truth be known, they'd like to see us all dead, basically. So the moral codes and the religious services prescribed by the First Congress of the Army and Navy were created by the very men who would later write the First Amendment. Okay? This is the First Congress. These are the people who would write the First Amendment. So the deeds show very clearly that they didn't hold the view of the First Amendment the way we do today. If there was even a hint, you know, this wrong concept of this high wall, this division of church and state in the minds of the Continental Congress, they would never have made the kinds of rules they did for the American military, because according to this modern view, which everybody says they held, which they didn't, those kind of rules would not have been wrong, they'd have been illegal, they'd have been unconstitutional. I mean, if anyone in today's Congress tried to pass those kind of laws or make people have two services on ship a day and every Sunday have a preacher come in and preach, I mean, they'd be faced with the wrath of 100,000 Weinsteins. They'd be called into court right and left. They'd be sued for breaking federal law. This whole thing about the division of church and state is a lie. And the First Congress proves it, because the very people who made those rules and made those people live morally in the Army and behave morally, they're the ones who put the First Amendment in there. There's a lot of things you can point to that cause destruction of this nation. But I think that America's been destroyed mostly because the people of the country are backslidden and asleep. The majority of the population has been backslidden and asleep for many years, and they've been ignoring the systematic campaign of Christ-hating groups like the ACLU, like this MRFF, this military group, like the National Education Association, activist Supreme Court judges that are liberal, that hate Christians, they're anti-Christian, and other organizations, okay? All these organizations have succeeded in reshaping America by hiding its Christian heritage and destroying its biblical foundation. It's taken 120 years, but because Americans have been asleep and just indulge in their own little world, they just care what's going on in their own little world, us four and no more, they've been asleep, they don't care what's going on in the government, they're backslidden. All these people have succeeded in their goal. They have succeeded in making America a people who is easily controllable, and they're being drawn further and further away from the virtue, from the morality, from the religious principles of the country. And the common denominator of all these groups is a desire to see immoral Americans willingly embrace Satan's final socialist world government. That's the end of it all. First, you destroy the country, you destroy the institutions, you brainwash the people so they become, you know, pliable zombies, and eventually they'll willingly embrace this final satanic world government that's coming up. They won't even fight it. They'll just walk right into it willingly. But out of all those people, I believe it was ungodly activist judges, especially the Supreme Court, that really set the stage for America's eventual collapse. Once the Supreme Court changed the meaning of the First Amendment in 1947, it was only a matter of time before they began to legislate Christianity and the Christian God right out of every facet of American life. It started with governmental life, now it's public life, and now it's even delved into private life. Okay? And that all was possible because of one Supreme Court ruling that turned the First Amendment on its head inside out. And that is the day America died. The America that was created in 1776 ceased to exist in 1947. It just took a little bit of time, took about 7,500 years for the fruit of that thing to come forth. Judicial branch is definitely necessary, and the Founding Fathers knew that, but even though they knew it was necessary, some of the Founding Fathers saw the danger of having a Supreme Court, and way back then, They warned of what's happening today. These guys were immensely brilliant. God just brought together supernaturally at that time a bunch of different people, different views of religion, different political views, and they were all brilliant. They were all these brilliant men. He brought them all together and somehow formed them and shaped them enough to put the Constitution together, put this nation together. When you read the history of this nation, it opens your eyes to the sovereignty of God and how he works. That's all I can say. But these guys had a lot of foresight. I just read a couple warnings from them. In 1820, Thomas Jefferson, this is what he said. He says, "Very dangerous doctrine indeed to consider the judges as the ultimate arbitrators of all constitutional questions, and one that would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy." Okay, an oligarchy is a bunch of people who rule over you. Instead of a king or a king and his counselors, you have an oligarchy. And he's saying it's a very dangerous idea to consider the judges, that means the Supreme Court judge of the United States, as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions. That would place us under a despotism of an oligarchy, which is exactly what we're under right now. He said a little later on, he said, "The Supreme Court is advancing its noiseless steps like a thief across the field of jurisdiction." In other words, he said the Supreme Court is already crossing the lines. It's already taking power into itself. It's already overstepping its bounds. Alexander Hamilton, he says, "For I agree that there is no liberty if the power of judging be not separated from the legislature and executive powers." One of the things that means is, you see, Congress is the branch that makes the laws. The Supreme Court's job is to make rulings according to the laws that Congress has passed. And when they start making laws according to their own opinions, they've crossed the line. And he says, "For I agree there is no liberty if the power of judging be not separate from the legislative and executive powers." Okay? Abraham Lincoln said this in his inaugural address. He said, quote, "The candid citizen must confess that if the policy of government upon vital questions affecting the whole people is to be irrevocably fixed by decisions of the Supreme Court, then the instant they are made," in other words, the instant the Supreme Court starts making those kinds of decisions, starts making policy decisions for the government, "the instant they're made, the people will have ceased to be their own rulers, having to that extent resigned their government into the hands of that eminent tribunal." So he's saying as soon as the Supreme Court starts making its own laws and own interpretations, instead of following the laws of Congress passes, then we cease to be a free nation. And that's exactly what happened. Now, three different U.S. presidents, Jefferson, Jackson, and Lincoln, defied or ignore Supreme Court rulings when they consider them to be unconstitutional. So the Founding Fathers made it very clear that the Supreme Court could not be the final arbiter of the meaning of the Constitution. They were simply there to enforce what the Constitution says, not to interpret it, not to reinterpret it. And if the American people would have continued, see, the first three or four generations of Americans, they homeschooled their children. They taught them the Bible. They taught them religion. They taught them morality. They also taught them about the government and how it was supposed to function. They taught them the history of their nation. But as people stopped teaching their children what this government is, how it's supposed to function, people forgot. And they didn't watch the judiciary branch. Of course, now they don't watch anything. It's beer, Monday Night Football for them. That's all they care about. The Founding Fathers made it clear in their writings that the Supreme Court could not be the final judge of what's constitutional and what's not constitutional. And if American people had kept that wisdom, that understanding flowing from generation to generation, the Supreme Court could never become what it is right now, which is a despotic oligarchy. Because we were given the power to impeach these judges. Did you know that? I don't think most people know that. If they become traitors, or they start handing down decisions that are contrary to the people's safety, contrary to the safety of the nation, contrary to the Constitution, the people have the right to impeach Supreme Court justices. See, we think the Constitution guarantees a federal judge his position for life once he's appointed by the president. That's not true. He's only appointed for the duration of, quote, good behavior, according to the Constitution. As long as he's of good behavior, they can stay there. And for that reason, impeachment was used in the past whenever judges disregarded public interest or opinion, they start taking too much power, start becoming policymakers. Previous generations used the Constitution to impeach them. All right, but today's Americans don't even know they can be impeached. You know, they stopped teaching that kind of stuff in public schools long ago. Now, I just want you to think about something. Back in 1962, it was the Supreme Court that took Bible reading in the prayer out of school. Imagine what would have happened if the entire nation would have rose up and demanded the impeachment of the Supreme Court judges who gave them that ruling. What kind of nation would this be today? You think it would be the same condition? Ever since 1947, when the Supreme Court turned the First Amendment on its head, we've had an ungodly socialist oligarchy in power. And they realized long ago that the American people have no spine to defend the country. They don't care. As long as you're getting bread and circus, you're getting their six-pack, getting their football on the Monday nights, they don't care about anything. They're just self-absorbed in their own little life. And today, that oligarchy, that Supreme Court, repeatedly shows its contempt for the will of the people. Just a few examples: it recently overturned direct elections in Washington, New York, California, Arkansas, and Texas and Missouri. The issues were like making English a state official language, or ending government assistance for illegal immigrants, enacting term limits, prohibiting physician-assisted suicides. Those kinds of things were voted on, direct votes in these states. The vote passed, and then the Supreme Court overturned them. It preferred a different outcome. You know, it didn't like what the outcome of the vote was, so it just overturned it. Even though the Constitution gave the lawmaking powers to Congress, courts have become the predominant policymaking body in the nation. All right, it's the Supreme Court who are constantly making policy. In fact, if you go to a tour of the Supreme Court, you'll often hear the claim that, people say something like, this is the building from which all the laws of the land emanate. Well, that's treason to the Founding Fathers. I mean, if you're a Founding Father and come up from the grave and heard that, you say, treason, treason. That goes directly against the Constitution. Anyway, the Supreme Court regularly strikes down or rewrites the laws of Congress to conform to its own liberal anti-Christian bias. I'll just give a couple examples. 1993. In 1993, the Congress passed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or FRA, in order to correct the earlier Supreme Court decision that weakened the long-standing First Amendment protection rights for religious groups. The Congressional Act reinstituted protection, declaring that the government entity must not interfere with a religious body unless it had a compelling state interest for doing so. Okay, so this is a congressional law trying to push back the power of the Supreme Court. So there was a case in Texas where a Catholic church, it wanted to expand its facilities, needed a building permit. The Catholic church wanted to get a permit. The city denied it. The church appealed to the RFRA, which was passed by the Congress, saying the city had no compelling state interest in denying that church a small expansion. So the court ruled otherwise, and it struck down Congress's attempt to protect religious bodies from government intrusion. The judges basically said, hey, we demand that you, Congress, adhere to our opinions regardless of what the Constitution says. We don't care about the Constitution. We're the ones, we have the power, and we demand that you do yield to us. And they did. The Supreme Court. These are the people who are responsible for things like the removal of the Bible from our public education, the national removal of God and references to God from public and government activities and structures. They're responsible for the abortion of over 45 million American unborn babies. That's, what, 7 or 8 times more than the Jews that Hitler killed. They're responsible for pornography, for child pornography in particular, because somebody tried to pass a law just recently outlawing access to child pornography, and they shot it down under the thing of free speech. They're responsible for our public education system being used to graphically teach our children about homosexual sex. I don't even want to list the things that they're teaching them in there. Because of them, the government is allowed to sponsor lasciviousness and alternate sex training, but it cannot sponsor Christian morals and values. Because of them, elected judges levy taxes, which is unconstitutional. Judges are running our schools, which is unconstitutional. Judges are striking down state laws that are outside their jurisdiction. Judges are responsible for their same-sex marriage. They're responsible for subjugating the state courts to the federal courts on matters that have nothing to do with them, they shouldn't be involved in. In 1985, the Supreme Court Justice, William Rehnquist, you might remember that name, he's made the following statement. He said, history must judge whether it was the fathers of this country in 1789 or the majority of today's court which has strayed from the meaning of the First Amendment. Okay, let me read that again. This guy said, history must judge whether it was the fathers of this country in 1789 or the majority of today's court which has strayed from the meaning of the First Amendment. You think that's a little arrogant? I do. I mean, it was the founders of this nation who created the First Amendment. They certainly know better than this clown what they meant when they wrote it. This is the kind of arrogant pride that American people have willingly subjected themselves to. They could have rose up at any time and demanded the impeachment of these people, but they're evil, just like them, and they don't care. They let the country go. It's incredible. They went to McDonald's the other day and asked if anybody knew where Benghazi was. Nobody knew what was going on. I have a video up my little collection now this week. It's called Stupid Americans. Two or three interviews. People are going to interview Americans, and it just shows you how stupid they are. Well, you don't have to wait for the verdict of history, I'm sorry, to know what the original intent of the fathers were when they did the First Amendment, because there's an abundance of original source documentation that explains very clearly what they meant. But according to today's anti-Christian Supreme Court, if all the laws they passed since 1947 are in line with the true intent of the First Amendment, then many of the things the forefathers did, many things that Congress did, many things the President did, are unconstitutional. I'm just going to give you a few examples of things that would now be illegal, you'd be thrown in jail for if you did it now. Asking the convent, the Constitutional Convention to begin with sessions of prayers. And they had a preacher come in to pray in the Congress every morning, every session. The Atkins Bible, the first Bible that was printed on this continent, was a little tiny 6-inch Bible they printed for the soldiers to carry around. It's called the Atkins Bible. It was endorsed by Congress. The war with Britain had cut off the supply of Bibles to the United States, and the Congress put a committee together to import 20,000 Bibles from Scotland and Holland and elsewhere. And then this guy named Robert Aitken from Philadelphia wanted to print more. They gave him permission, commissioned him to do it, and then they checked it out, and they approved it. It's called the Aitken's Bible. Of course, that's unconstitutional, according to today. Christianizing Delawares. They called the Indians of Delaware Delawares before that was populated. There was a resolution in Congress which made public lands available to a religious group, the Moravians, to Christianize, to evangelize the Indians and spread Christianity. It gave them 10,000 acres on, it's called the Muskingum River. Well, you can't do that now. You'd be hauled into court. The 1787 Northwest Ordinance, which passed in Congress in 1789, is one of America's four founding documents. It says, religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary, good means of learning shall forever be encouraged, and that directly links religion to public education. After being sworn in, George Washington delivered an inaugural address to a joint session of Congress. And in that address, he mentions how the Lord from Lord of Heaven was gracious to him, all that kind of stuff, mixing religion with politics right into Congress. All right. 1838, the New York legislature said this about America. It says, this is a Christian nation. Our government depends for its very being on the virtue of its people, on the virtue that is foundation and the morality of the Christian religion, and that this religion is the common and prevailing faith of the people. Okay, so 1838, the New York legislature declared this is a Christian nation, that Christian religion is the common and prevailing faith of the people. June 1774, Virginia, at the first news of the Boston Port Bill, Jefferson proposed a day of fasting, humiliation, and prayer to implore heaven to avert from us the horrors of civil war. That's illegal. It's unconstitutional, according to what people say now. 1780, the Congress says Congress sent forth a call of thanksgiving, entreating God to cause the knowledge of Christianity to spread over the earth. Imagine that. Congress sent forth a call of thanksgiving, entreating God to cause the knowledge of Christianity to spread all the earth. March 19th, 1782, the Congress says this. The United States, in Congress assembled, called men to pray that the religion of our divine Redeemer, with all its divine influences, may cover the earth as the water covers the sea. 1783 Congress says, the United States of America, in a committee of states assembled, recommend to the supreme executives of the several states to call the people to give thanks to God that he has been pleased to continue to us the light of the gospel truth. These are all declarations coming from a government office, from a government officials, okay? It's just the opposite of the wall of separation between church and state. Congress is calling for the gospel to be spread across the earth, praying for the gospel to be spread across the land. Delaware's Constitution, 1776, says everyone appointed to public office must say, quote, I do profess faith in God the Father and in the Lord Jesus Christ, his only Son, and in the Holy Ghost, one God and blessed forevermore, and I do acknowledge the Holy Scriptures of the Old and New Testament to be given by divine inspiration. South Carolina's Constitution says the Christian Protestant religion shall be deemed and is hereby constituted and declared to be the established religion of the state. See, once the Constitution passed, the federal government could not establish a religion, but the states could still establish a religion, and many of them did. So in South Carolina's Constitution, it says the Protestant religion is the established religion of the state. No person should be eligible to a seat in the Senate unless he be of the Protestant religion. Connecticut's first constitution says the providence of Almighty God declared the purpose of the political establishment was to maintain and preserve the gospel of the Lord Jesus. The scriptures hold forth the perfect rule of direction and government of all men and all duties, and they are to perform for God and man. the Constitution of Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Delaware, and Maryland, which were redone in 1776, required a professional belief in the truths of the Christian religion as a condition of holding office or a place of trust. All right. The Great and General Court of Massachusetts of 1776 proclamation says, quote, that piety and virtue, which alone can secure the freedom of any people, may be encouraged. They command and enjoin upon the good people of this colony that they lead sober, religious, and peaceful lives, avoiding all blasphemies, and revere the Lord's Scripture and the Lord's Day. 1776 Congress. Congress said a note to several states and to Washington, George Washington's army, calling for a service of thanksgiving for the victory over one of these battles they had. Okay, and they were encouraged to confess their sins, to make supplication that may please God through the merits of Jesus Christ, to be forgiven. All these things that the Congress did, the presidents did, individuals did in their public offices, it goes to show it's crazy. There's no way the First Amendment could mean what these people say it meant today. It's clear that the Founding Fathers were men of faith, and they realized the integral role faith played in the successful governing of the nation, in the creation of the nation, and the successful governing of the nation. There's all these things to prove and show that this high wall of separation of church and state is garbage. And it's only being done because people want to sin. They don't want to have the knowledge of God. Like it says in Romans, they want to forget God. They want God out of their lives. They don't want any reminders of God, any reminders of righteousness, any reminders of anything like that. But there's going to be a government coming that is the perfect picture of church and state. And America was a picture of that at the beginning. America was a little tiny picture of what's going to be going on in the millennium at the very beginning. See, because most of these colonies were established by pilgrims, or later on the Puritans came. And then later on people came from Holland, Germany, and different Switzerland and different countries. They're all religious. They all came because they're being persecuted. They all had their own separate colonies. I think there was like 13 different sects of Christianity in the original 13 colonies. There's all kinds. I got a list in one of these books. Tells you which ones they were. But they all came here for religious freedom and to practice their religion freely, to be a light on the hill. They were all Bible-believing people, and they knew what the Romans said about government. You just can't be running around without any authority and be under nobody's government. So they would come here, they make a compact, they'd set up their own government, and with their own state church in that little government. And then somebody else would come from, they'd set up their little community, and they'd have their little government set up. And then all these different 13 colonies came together and made the United States. But they're all based on God. The constitutions were all based, most of them constitutions were based on the church constitutions that they brought with them. And it's this idea of church and state, which people hate. Okay, because there's a lot of church and state evil. Islam is church and state. It's a blend of church and state. Roman Catholicism was a blend of church and state. But America was different. America was a different kind of church and state blend. And it was a little tiny microcosm and a little tiny picture of what the millennium is going to be like. And that's what God wanted. God wanted a testimony here that it's possible to live in a society governed by the Bible, by the laws of God. And God would prosper it if you did it. That's the story of America. And now they're going to be judged because they turned their back on it. Too lazy, didn't appreciate it, didn't want to pay the price to keep it. And then evil people took over. You got evil presidents, you got evil Congress, you got evil Senate, you got a more evil judiciary. And of course, it's too late to take it back. But there is a lot to learn in establishing this country. A lot to learn about God's sovereignty, how he moves, what the country was a picture of. Anyway, that's about it for tonight. I just want to bring that little idea to a church and state is going to be in the next age. So don't get anything against church and state. Either you're going to be a ruler of it or you'll be living under a perfect church and state combination next days, all right? So anyway, you guys can download, listen to that Light and the Glory. I have it up on my website. I'll put a link to it. And watch the videos. I got a new set of videos up there. Okay, anybody else have anything here? Jan, the video, they'll be up by tomorrow morning. I'm going to put them up. They're already on the site. There's just no links yet. When I put my message up, it'll be up tomorrow. All right. Let's call. Anybody? Okay. Well, thanks for coming, guys. Appreciate it. We'll see you next week, I guess. God willing. And the river don't rise.